Hi, I'm Josh. I was born in poverty-laden Flint, Michigan to a blue-collar working family. I went from pulling weeds, washing dishes, and delivering pizzas to building a small business doing over $150,000 a month. I sold it and moved to Costa Rica with my wife and four kids. And on this podcast, we explore the secrets and the strategies that I used to win. Building your business is one of the hardest things you will ever do. So let me finally help you automate, grow, and someday sell your company. Okay, we're recording. Keith, how are you?
Very well. How are you, sir?
Let me get my... Okay, I got my other little camera. What's up, camera? Look, Keith Kelpis. We're chatting. Actually, we're only like an hour, less than an hour away from each other, but we don't even have to like drive. We can just Skype it, even though Skype was being annoying for a few minutes, right?
Yes.
Okay, well, I'm going to do my cheesy podcast intro voice. And then I'll introduce you and we'll start recording the interview, okay?
Great.
Hey, everybody. Josh here from the Quick Talk Podcast. I'm excited. I got my friend Keith Kelpis on the line, and I'm excited to talk to him. Keith, how are you?
What's going on, Josh?
I'm just living the dream in my new little office. We got our little Send Gym office set up. I got a little fake fireplace and a little TV going. I got my podcast stuff. It's pretty epic. I like it.
Sounds like a man cave.
It's a man cave for sure. You're the guy with the man cave. Look at this thing behind you. I know the people listening to the podcast can't see it, but I'm actually making a little video of this podcast. And where are you? Are you going to like build a media empire in your basement or something?
Actually, yeah. I got a studio room downstairs with sound foam padding. That's probably why it looks cool like that. It's just something you might see in a studio. And studio lights and a green screen, a black screen, a white screen. Lights all over the place and microphones. It's something like a media room. And then I've converted half of my garage and insulated it into what will be a video podcast studio with a green screen. So I've wanted to do this for a long time, and coming this winter, I will be putting out some pretty awesome content from my digital man cave.
Yeah, the mothership, right? Well,
the mothership.
For people that don't know you, that listen to my podcast, basically, I'll let you give a brief overview of your story. I've had you on before, but you came from, you know, nothing really. And then you started a landscaping business, lawn care business. You did that. You eventually moved into windows. But the weird part is you decided to start making videos of yourself while you were working. And that evolved into this whole giant thing. You have like, what do you have? Like 1,000 videos. You have 30,000 YouTube subscribers and people write you letters and track you down and say you changed your life, basically because Keith is inspirational and his story is really interesting. He came from nothing. He loves to help people and overcome self-limiting beliefs and understand that they can make it happen. And I mean, is that a good description of your story and how you got there and why you even have a media studio? I mean, on YouTube, you're just huge right now.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So tell us though, break down, you know, from the, weren't you like living in a car at one time? Give us a little nutshell of what happened and how you got to where you are today, because your passion is making content for people and inspiring people, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. I remember back in early 2000s, I was going through depression. I thought the secret to success, you know, when I was 17, 18, 19, was to work for literally four jobs. So I would go out and work for a landscaping company all day. And then in the evenings, I was, you know, bar backing at night, you know, like stocking beer bottles and things like that till 3-4 o'clock in the morning. Then getting up on Sundays and doing roofing. I was, you know, pushing over 90 hours a week. And I couldn't do it anymore. And you know, I ended up losing a lot and going into depression. I burned out at a young age. I just wanted to take on the world. And I remember I was depressed and I was in bed for an entire month. And wow. I picked up this book called The Power of the Subconscious Mind. And it was an old book. I used to take every paycheck and I would go to the used bookstore and I would buy books, because the people around me at work and anybody else I knew, or friends or family, were talking about nothing but the same old rhetoric. And what I read in that book was, you know, what the mind can conceive and believe it can achieve. I started to learn things that gave me hope and said, wow, what if one day I could actually be successful? But I looked around where my life was at the time and I saw nothing but you know, pain and failure or frustration, negativity, no role models. Mm-hmm. But this hope is what pulled me through the whole time. I remember one time I lived by this bridge by a park, and I would go out there at night in the freezing cold, just me and the stars. And I remember one night, you know, I don't like to push my beliefs on anybody, but I did. I dropped to my knees and I just started crying, and I was crying to God, because when you get at your lowest point, you actually cry out to a higher power. You know what I mean?
I totally know what you mean. I mean, you reach a breaking point. You can't just work 100 hours forever and not get out of the hole and still not have enough to do what you want. And weren't you surrounded with being around all that negativity? I mean, even businesses listening to this might have a circle of friends or people they spend too much time with that aren't speaking life, you know, into their life. They're not building you up. They're not someone you can share your goals with, because they're just going to be negative about it or shoot them down. And for you, it was, I guess, the books that really opened your eyes to some other possibilities, right?
Yeah, I found Dr. Wayne Dyer and Anthony Robbins. So, I mean, I was, 17, 18, 19, 20, all through my 20s. By the time I was 27, I read over 300 books, and now I'm at over 400 books on audio. It was like standing on the shoulders of giants. They were talking about things that would make me cry. I'd be on a job site working with my MP3, my iPod in, back in the days of iPod, and I would be crying while working or in experiencing a state of complete bliss while the other guys around me were listening to rap music or something like that. I'm having this experience of tranquility and learning and developing in my spirit. But I had this feeling of this deep inner calling that one day I would be in contact or somehow be in communication with literally tens of thousands of people. I've known it. And I swear to you, not, let's just say it was my mind, but to me it was God said to me,
it was God,
keep just pushing forward. And I promise you one day you will be famous. I don't know what the word is for it.
An influencer.
One day, this is going to happen in your life. And I said, why am I so weird and so different? Why am I listening to – and not that I'm, you know, better than anybody else. I mean, I was very humbled at many times in my life, trust me. And I've made a lot of mistakes. But it said, just keep pushing forward. I said, why am I listening to all these books and reading all these books and getting into the stuff that nobody else my age gets into? It said, because it's preparing you one day to be an influencer.
Yeah.
And the day you were actually there, you were the keynote speaker in Baltimore, Maryland at the huge convention.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Before I went on stage that morning and I spoke in front of around 100 or more people, I was standing outside by the water with my, you know, my shirt, my freshly pressed iron shirt buttoned up and tucked in, and my suitcase. It was early morning. I mean, I dropped to my knees on the steps outside of that hotel, that conference center, and I started bawling my eyes out. And literally, my hands were up, and they were shaking, and I was going, thank you, God, thank you, God, thank you, God. Like, it was almost like being in church. It was this amazing revelational experience, and I was sobbing and sobbing and crying. And when I stood up like a soldier. It was like, go get him, Kelphis.
That's odd. The way I see you, Keith, is you're a square peg. And you've been trying to find a square hole. And YouTube has allowed you to be you. And look, some people get it, some people don't. But the people that connect with you is very, very ravenous. Like, people really get a lot of value out of you. They're loyal. It's crazy. I've seen it firsthand. I mean, really. And in our industry, you know, we're a highly fragmented industry, service industries in general, I mean. Highly fragmented. There's not a lot of places people congregate. But you've built this little tribe of people all trying to make themselves better and do it. And I want to go back to books for a second. And then we'll talk about, you know, the customer life cycle and some of the things we talked about earlier today. But books are fascinating to me because we undervalue how epic books are. Because you go to like Barnes and Noble and there's 50,000 books. And you walk through and you're like, oh, there's one. Oh, there's another one. And you see one and you're like, The Secrets to the Known Universe. You're like, eh, it's $15. You're like, it's $15. I'll wait till it's $10. Or you see a business book. It's like, How I Literally conquered the world in business starting from nothing with no help, and here's the three keys to do it. And we're like, well, you know, it's $18. I don't know. Are you crazy? Like, books are an entire person's life experience condensed down. Like, hey, this is all my pain and suffering laid out, and you can avoid, like, all these mistakes. You can learn all this stuff for a few bucks. I mean, it's crazy. We take it for granted. It's the internet, everything's available to us. And that's why I always say we have a major increase in knowledge in this day and age, but we don't have an increase in wisdom. You know, people don't understand the difference between working on the right things in their business and seeking out the right types of knowledge and just consuming content in general. You know, I just think books get a bad rap. I'm an audio guy too. I like audiobooks. But what are your thoughts on that? I mean, how important were those 300, 400 books you read to get you kind of where you are? I mean, you got a nice business now. You're doing well. You just got a new place. You got your studio. You got your YouTube subscribers. You're having fun. You're speaking. You're traveling. You're actually going to be on the cover of Turf Magazine, I heard somewhere. Like, you already were, you're going to be soon. That's cool. That's awesome. And this is just the beginning, right? Look how young you are. How big of a role did those books play in your life?
Monumental. I learned something from one of a leader that I follow. His name is Orrin Woodward. He's actually from Michigan, and
we cleaned his windows.
The guy is a multimillionaire, a leader, a mover, and a changer and a shaker. And he said something. He said, you know, like, if you don't think you need this book or to spend $7 on a book, that's the exact reason why you need it, because you don't think that you need it. And I started to learn that my ego is saying, I don't want to spend $15 on this book, or I don't want to listen to this audiobook where I'm or I'd rather listen to music. But my higher self knew, and what the, you know, when you start listening to people that know more than you, they're wiser, they've been through it in life.
And step one is realizing that there actually are probably people out there that possibly maybe do know more than you. Like, the older I get, the more dumb I realize I am. The more I realize how much I don't know. And a lot of guys just think they couldn't possibly learn something that would be that valuable to them. They're wrong, but they believe that.
I believe one of the smartest leaps that I've taken was the ability to realize, like, you got to pay to play. The night before last night, Brendan Burchard is one of my favorite online leader entrepreneurs. He's a New York Times bestselling author, and his programs, his training programs and academies are very expensive. One was $1,100 or $1,200. He sold it for half off. Two nights ago, it was $497, and then there was a $100 upsell. And it's about leading and influencing and how to structure speeches and how to communicate with your audience. It's very in-depth training in what I'm learning how to be better at, which is a communicator online. $500. Actually, I told my wife about it. We're going, hey, I just dropped $600 on this program. She's like, what? You know, just I do that stuff just to get a reaction, and it's fun. But then literally within 3-4 hours into the program, I'm like, oh my God, this is worth tens of thousands of dollars, because here is somebody who is a multimillionaire New York Times bestselling author who is actually condensing his wisdom down into a course that I can take in bite-sized chunks at my own pace. Mm-hmm. You would have to pay somebody like that $50,000 for them to personally sit down with you and consult you through your business.
That's
so
right.
Spending money on an education, like, I just paid off my student loans last week. Me and my friends, nothing against college, but my friends that are entrepreneurs, they say, you know, I didn't learn anything in college that helped me in my real life. But now we have this explosion of, you know, information and authors and leaders and experts coming out and putting together, you know, online courses or books, or you could always buy books or audio programs. And to me, like, I don't hesitate if something is, you know, $37 that I can learn something that would change my life. I just finished a book last week about taxes and small business and accounting, you know, written by a professional CPA, and the book cost me $14. But what I learned in that book is probably saved me, you know, $10,000.
I think the first time you invest in education outside of college, like, if you in modern new web 2.0 education, right? Because this is huge. Like, information products on the internet are a multi-billion dollar industry right now, and it's still in its infancy. Like, all of us have so much stuff in our brain that we take for granted that could really benefit other people. So you have authors and speakers, all these people that create stuff. I have a boot camp. I know you have a book and some other stuff, but we take it for granted. And I think the first time you invest in something like that, it's absolutely terrifying. It's weird. It's outside your comfort zone. You're like, okay, I'm on an interweb web page and I'm clicking and it's a lot of money and you're not sure. But once you start, like for me, I bought a $2,000 course a few months ago. I know I'd mentioned it to you. That's no big deal for me because it's just an investment. It's not a cost. It's an investment. That's literal. And to me, it's just reality. But I do have compassion to understand for people that aren't there yet.
That brings me to a point. If we go back to business, a lot of new small business owners, which is the audience that I talk to, are terrified of taking money out of their pockets and spending it on marketing or advertising or investing in something that's going to make their business work, like, say, the customer life cycle. For me, spending money on an email marketing program or some type of software automation or even a QuickBooks account, you know, not trying to do it all manually. Paying to play. When you spend money on things that make your business run more efficient or improve your business, you get it back in dividends.
Mm-hmm. That's right. It's a multiplier. So let's say that you do a task every week that takes you 2 hours. Every week, 2 hours, 2 hours, 2 hours, 2 hours. And let's say you could trade $500 to reduce that to 1 hour. Okay? So over the course of a year, you save 50 hours, right? And so you spent $500. And then over the course of 2 years, look, it's just math to me because it truly is an investment. All tools are investment. People have no problem spending 10 grand on a new mower or some fancy piece of equipment, which doesn't make their phone ring, by the way. So they're still screwed, but they won't step out in education or in even marketing. You got to have some education to even know how to do the marketing.
It's a catch 22.
This could go on for like 8 hours. I want to talk.
Yes, it could.
Let's talk about the customer life cycle, because that originally was something I put out in my Window Wealthy book, which I think you've had, because this is like 3 years ago when I first had that out. And I talk about the customer life cycle. I mention it on the podcast sometimes. And for those of you that don't know, what I'm talking about is all the touch points in between the moment a potential customer realizes your company exists, all the way through the phone calls, the estimate, the scheduling, the service, whatever you do, actually doing the work, getting paid, and then following up afterwards, I call that the customer lifecycle. And people don't focus on making that process, that experiential they don't focus on the customer experience, on engaging them. For example, when you're at the job itself, like, do you learn their dog's name? Do you talk to them? Do you connect? Do you offer a walk around? How do you talk? What is your how articulate? So people don't do that. You had mentioned that you started doing more with that recently. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so we do landscaping and window cleaning, but window cleaning is a different animal. And the thing that I like about it is, you know, if a customer looks out the window and the landscaper, let's just say his body language isn't A++. It's not that big of a deal. Inside of a customer's home, you're inside of their personal territory, and that's being extremely conscientious and in a state of service when you're inside of a person's home is extremely important. I've made it a point that every single time I walk into a customer's house, if they have a cat or a dog and it comes up to me to smell me, I bend over and I pet it. And I'll scratch the dog's ears real quick. And that lets the person know when the dog, you know, you could tell a lot about a person by the way their animals react to you or react to them or what kind of house it is. You get all these senses when you walk in the house. But that lets the person know that I'm a trustworthy person. They're in good hands. I just scratched Toto. And what I do when I walk in the house, I introduce myself. Hi, my name is Keith. You know, you hired us from whatever. Google, Angelus, whatever it is. I'll be on the inside cleaning. This is Alex. I'll introduce to, you know, the guy who works for me. He'll be on the outside and we'll be working simultaneously. What I'm going to do is, you know, walk around the inside. You know, I set up expectations.
Right. Boom. That's the key right there. You set expectations, which increases the perceived value. The customer feels like, oh, I understand what's about to happen. That's huge.
Yes. I say, okay, what I'm going to do is what we call is a pre-trip inspection. As I walk around the inside, taking out all of your screens, I'll be checking for any existing scratches or scuffs or maybe, you know, breaks in the wood or the molding or any tears in the screens. And if I see something, I'll point it out to you and I'll let you know. Another thing that we're doing now is if I sense the customer is a little bit of a tense person, I might show them my tools and be like, we use microfiber scrubbers and soft rubber squeegees with Dawn dish soap and vinegar. I put vinegar in my solution. And then the tool outside is called the water-fed pole. It's a very soft boar's head bristle brush. And the customer's like, okay. Or sometimes they'll be really overly interested. It's kind of weird. And
but,
I'll be like,
the important part is that you have a process. Like, you're repeating this right now. I know that you're actually using this because you're doing it you do it. I mean, it's part of your deal. And other companies don't do it like this. Wow. They might have a stripped down version of it. Those minds as a service provider is done by all the little things added together. Not one big event. Not one one liner that zings them. It's those little things at the end when you're done. That whole thing creates a lot of perceived value, and they're happy to write the check, right?
Oh, yeah. Can I continue? Because I believe that some of the people listening might be really interested in the strategical, tactical, step-by-step process of what I say. It might help. I'm not saying my way is the best, but...
Keep going. That's good.
When I knock on the door and the customer is open, before they even open the door, I will check my posture and make sure that my back is straight and I have a smile on my face and that my arms are, you know, at my sides and I'm not doing anything weird or checking my phone. So I'm at attention when they open the door. So as soon as they open the door, imagine like a service commercial when you see carpet cleaning company and then you see like the guy smiling. I want to be that guy who looks like bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and happy to clean your windows and at your service. And then I want them to see as soon as I step into the door that I'm stepping into plastic booties that they can see. And they say, oh, don't worry about it. Don't, you know, I say, no, that's okay. That's our policy. We wear booties whenever we're inside of our customers' homes. And then so I do this whole thing. And I what I'm doing is I'm sub-communicating to that customer that you're in good hands. And sometimes they'll follow you around for a minute. But as soon as they can feel, you transfer a feeling of confidence to them that you're taking charge, they can trust you, and they can relax and go back to their home office or go back to their computer, and they don't have to worry about anything. As soon as they feel that, you're golden, and then you just run around and start cleaning all the windows and doing what you do. But at some point in the process, and I learned a lot of this stuff from you as well, you brought it to my attention that, you know, oh my God, I'm not out here just by myself. And that's what I really appreciate about your Window Wealth audiobook. If you guys haven't gotten it, you got to get a copy of it. If I'm working in the den and they're working on their computer, I might chit-chat with the customer a little bit. Nothing personal, nothing about my life or anything. Just something simple. I'll say, oh, I noticed a little, there's a little scuff here on the window. Just wanted to point that out. Oh, really? I never seen that before. Blah, 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 blah. It's important to actually find something and point it out to them so they know that you are accountable and you are – what happens when you do that to the customer? They know that you're alert and you're paying attention. And then they also know that you're not going to screw up anything in their house or screw up their windows and you're not going to scratch anything. When I'm moving screens in and out and I'm taking them out, if they're very dirty and I'm taking them, stacking them on the front porch or the garage or the back sliding door, I make sure I'm extremely careful with the screens and I don't let them tap or click on any walls or anything. If I'm walking in between hallways across, you know, molding or doors or walls and flat paint, I make sure that my squeegees are tucked in at my side so it doesn't like rub against the wall or something, because I believe that if there's like this trial time, if you do one little thing like smack a tool against a wall and cause a little scratch and that customer sees you do that, he or she could instantly, boom, you just lost a customer in that moment. And you're not even aware that they think you're a complete idiot. And I can't, you know, I'm so conscientious of that.
I got to stop you there because you're right. And the problem with losing customers is that you don't typically almost ever know that you lost them. Most people are not confrontational. They're not going to call you and say, hey, Keith, just giving you a call. Listen, you really embarrassed yourself last week. And next spring, we're not going to be calling you back. Just wanted to give you a heads up, be negative, and make you feel like crap about yourself. Like they're not going to do that. They just don't come back. And this speaks to the point of why I'm doing a training tomorrow night, depending on when I release this. It's on Thursday, the 17th of November. But I'm doing a training talking about how to keep your customer base together, because people have a bucket and the bucket holds all their customers and there's holes in their bucket. And one of the holes could be not focusing on the customer life cycle, not providing good experience. Another hole could be never following up with them after you do stuff, which is the biggest hole. It's like a gaping, huge, gushing, water falling out hole. I'm going to teach on that and go into great detail on the science behind retaining your customers and the gratitude effect and all that stuff. And it's huge, because if you're losing 20 customers a month and you don't know it because you have 500 customers and maybe you reach a point of scale to where you're losing people, and that amount of loss is equal to the amount of new business coming in, that's when a business will flatline. And if you're really small, you can still grow even though you suck for a while, right? Because you're getting new customer, and you eventually start to saturate where you're located, and then you peter off and you go flat. And some people stay there for like 15 years. Like, they get to $200,000-$300,000 revenue, they never go past that because their fall off is so high. And the customer life cycle and the gratitude, all the stuff we're going to talk on in the training, all of this ties into fixing that, right?
Yes.
I hope you can come on to that. I would love to have you in the live chat with your little emojis and all your hilarious comments. That would be awesome.
Sure.
Are you going to be able to hop on there?
Yes, I'll be there.
Okay, cool.
I want to be real. I'm kind of known for being real in my videos and expressing my frustrations and anxieties and things like that. Sometimes when I'm in a customer's house and I want to do the multi-touch, which means, you know, make sure you interact with them. Let them know, Mrs. Jones, your windows are clean. Everything looks good. Although all the screens are put back and cleaned, all the windows are closed and locked, all the blinds are put back, and everything looks good to me, but obviously we're only human. I learned that from you. Would you like to take a final walk around to make sure we have met, or to make sure we meet or exceed your expectations? Stuff like that. Okay, then you go through that whole process, and then who would I make the check out to? And then when they're writing the check, you say, you know, Mrs. Jones, our business, what I say, is survives and thrives off of positive reviews on Google. If I send you a link, would you mind taking a moment to leave a well-worded positive review on our window cleaning page on Google? Can I text it to you right now in this moment or email it to you? If you sit there and you tell them that and you ask them that with your whole heart.
Boom.
And you pause and you hold that. Now you're holding that customer accountable because they looked in your eyes and they said they would do it. And usually people who hire people to clean their windows aren't people with low standards. They're people that have integrity. I hired a service recently, and it's not any that I've talked about, and it was moderately expensive under a 6-month contract, genius service. And a big perk of their service was getting automated positive reviews from customers. Well, emails are great. We all get inundated with a bunch of emails, but I'll tell you, nothing is more powerful than looking your customers in the eye in that moment when you've cleaned their windows and they're happy and they're handing you a check and asking them for a positive review. Our reviews have skyrocketed, and now we're the most positive reviewed window cleaning service in our entire city because of that one specific thing. And I always ask customers when they call, you know, thank you for calling Kelfis Window Cleaning. This is Keith speaking. How can I help you? As soon as they start talking, they want a quote. I say, if you don't mind me asking, what website did you learn about our services? Oh, we found you on Google. Okay, where on Google? Your Google business page. And they usually say, you had more positive reviews than anybody else, or you had a bunch of positive reviews and nobody else had any reviews, and your reviews are positive. So we decided to call you because all these other people. Do you get what I'm saying? It's social proof. So when you're building that in intentionally and you're turning that machine, and then also at the same time, make sure you collect your customer's email address when you're talking to them. I do it over the phone. I have this little trick I do. I say, and your email address for confirmation, so I can send them a confirmation that will be at their house, you know, Thursday morning at 9 a.m. Mm-hmm. And I always get their email address, and I log it into an actual window cleaning specific window cleaning client email account so I can email market to them. So there's all these different things. But here's the part that frustrates me. When you're busy as hell and you're stressed out and you're in anxiety and you're running behind jobs and your customer's working, can you really sit there like and bug and pester the crap out of them? Like, you feel like they're like, okay, just clean my freaking windows and get the hell out of here. It's like almost like when you go into the oil shop and they got 5 pages of documents. Okay, would you like your air filter? How about your lights? Let's do your wipers. Let's do this. How about this? Would you like the best oil? How about that? Can we get your email address? What about your phone number? What about your social security? Like, You're like, you know what? I'm never coming back here again because you won't stop bugging me. And when I go to places and they're asking me all these questions like Harbor Freight today, I instantly say, and I come across as kind of a – I try to say it as friendly as possible. But I say I don't want to give out any personal information because I don't want you to market the hell to me. Excuse me. I'm getting excited. But unfortunately, in a very professional way, you have to become that company and build all that structure into the business. Am I going way too far here, man?
No, it's fine. Look, your point's made. Your point's made. And okay. To answer your question, here's a great opportunity for me to do a little bit of teaching and coaching, okay? When you build systems in your business, you build them for the rule, not the exception. And so no system ever, ever, ever can never be violated. They have to be elastic. And so you use common sense. And so, for example, with baseball, you know, you're a Hall of Fame baseball player. If you get on base, you know, 300 batting average of 300, you're a Hall of Fame baseball player if that's your career batting average. So you're not on base 7 out of 10 times. It's all about the law of averages. Of course, I would never pester someone. One thing I teach in my boot camp too is how to mirror your clients. You know, the way you talk to a 32-year-old attorney with a trophy wife, the language and the tone you use is different than a 4'11", purple-haired, 78-year-old grandmother, right? You're going to talk slower to her to make her feel safe and comfortable. You got to do a little mirroring. But just because there's a weird anomaly and some guy's a jerk doesn't mean you don't build a system, doesn't mean you don't build a process, because had you not done that, you wouldn't have all those Google reviews we talked about, right? So, I mean, I get it. I mean, we've talked about a lot. We talked about books. We talked about how you read all these books, came from negativity, launched into your
You know
thing.
What I love about you, man? Okay, so for those of you listen, we become friends on a personal basis, and we're friends now over all these last 3 years. And Josh has actually personally coached me through my business a couple times in coaching sessions. And what I think is so great about him is I'll come at him with this black white dramatic scenario, and then he'll find a way to say, Keith, it's not black or white. There's elasticity. There's a gray area. And then that creates space for improvement, for progress, like you said earlier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, look, and the reason I know this is through my own pain. You know, I'd have employees come back and say, we can't do this system because of this. There's 1,000 reasons why we can't do all the stuff that we know we're supposed to do. And so you got to find a way to usually do the stuff that you need to do. If you can usually do it, you're still going to destroy your local competition. Because look, if you just answer your phone, you're already in the top 15% of all local service providers. That's step one. Come on, you can do that. Step two, you do some of the things we're talking about. If you do a portion of what Keith talked about, this is so stinking simple. You're gonna crush everybody because very few companies even think about this stuff, let alone execute on it.
Yes. I make sure if I can't answer my phone in the environment for a customer so they can perceive professionalism, I won't answer the phone. If there's like, you know, if I'm at home and the environment isn't right. So because all you have to do, I mean, go through and start calling companies off of Google or Craigslist, carpet cleaning, window cleaning businesses, just as a test.
Good luck. Good luck getting an answer.
If you do get an answer, hello.
I love that though. That's awesome. Look, this is so easy to win at these things. Look, business is hard. But winning in this area is not that hard. It's not a big deal. We got to run, Keith. We could talk forever. I got to wrap it up here. But cool. I hope, I know you're really busy, but hopefully you can hop on the webinar tomorrow. It's, I think, the best one I've ever put together. I'm not trying to overhype it or be dramatic. It's really, 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 really valuable information that can help any service company big time. Because I think small business owners, you and me and everybody listening, we take simple things and we complicate them. We make all this so much more difficult than it needs to be. We overwhelm ourselves and numb ourselves. We don't have to. It's not that hard to grow a business if you can simplify, get some clarity. That's what I'm going to give on the training. If you want to sign up for it, everybody, you can go to sendjim.io/gratitude. That's
gratitude.
The name of it. Yeah, the name of the webinar is The Gratitude Effect, The Science of Business Growth. And what I'm doing, this isn't conjecture and opinion and my thoughts. This is fact. The way that you emotionally connect with your customers, the strategy you can use to have a high repeat rate in your business, meaning they come back for more, they buy more stuff more often, you can control these levers in your business. You can control the levers, and it's not expensive, it's not a big deal, and it's totally overlooked by almost everybody. And if you have holes in your bucket, and you're great at Facebook ads and direct mail, who cares? Who cares? Your business will definitely still go flat when you reach that threshold where you're losing as many as you're getting. And that's what I want to help people avoid. So anyway, you can go to it. We'll be on there. The last one we had almost 2,000 lines of chat in the live chat. It was a lot of fun. It's a good time. It's about an hour long, and I think everybody will like it. And Keith, thank you for taking time in your man cave studio as well, of course.
Yes. This is The Power of Gratitude. Is that the name of it?
The Gratitude Effect. It's about
the Gratitude Effect.
Yeah, because, okay, when I express sincere gratitude to you, if I called you personally off this, said, Keith, listen, thanks for doing the interview. Super appreciate it. Okay, that's one touch point of gratitude. And there's a little bitty little nugget that goes in your brain that triggers a dopamine high, and you're like, hey, I feel good that he likes me because I did that thing. And then what if I followed up with a handwritten note that came to you in three days, right? I said, Keith, again, man, I just appreciate, value the relationship very much. That's a big deal, okay? And then let's say that a month later, I send you a $5 Starbucks card. I'm like, dude, Keith, I read this funny thing online. I thought of you. Here, buy a coffee on me, blah, blah, blah. The point is that we don't put any effort into managing the most important relationships in our life. And this isn't just about customers. It's about your employees, and it's about influencers. It's about the people that are the gatekeepers to all this other work you can get, to bury yourself with profitable work. We're not strategic. I'm not talking about being manipulative. I'm talking about being strategic and very intelligent with the way we manage these relationships. And it's not hard, and I'm going to break it down step by step on how to do it.
Through the power of an emotion called gratitude. Can yes. I close with one last thing?
Yep.
I'll make it quick. When I talk to somebody I haven't spoken to in a long time that I know, and they say, oh my God, I'm going through this horrible situation. My life is falling apart. This happened outside of my control. And you get off the phone with that person and you go, oh my God, I didn't realize how good I have it. Those are the moments when you're so thankful for that job, for that customer, for that window cleaning job, for your wife, for your kids, for whatever you have. And that thankfulness spreads like wildfire. And that's when you start getting all these tips from customers and you're like, oh my God, the power of gratitude. So, okay.
It is. It's contagious. People crave it. They crave it on a conscious and mostly subconscious level, but it's very addicting. Yes. That's how you get referrals. Look, hey, we've talked for almost 40 minutes, Keith. You the man. I appreciate it. I can't wait. Are you going to have a podcast someday? What's going on with the pod? You got the same mic I got. That's like a fancy one, right? Nah, it's not that fancy. It's a cheap one, but it's a good one. Are you going to do a podcast? What's going on?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
The Untrapped.
You heard it
podcast.
Here first.
I actually have a podcast on SoundCloud.
Okay. Well, I'll find it and put a link to it in the show notes so people can check it out.
Cool.
All right.
Thank you.
Keith, we'll see you. Hey, thanks for hanging out, friends. And from all of us here at the Quick Talk Podcast team, we hope you love today's show. We hope that you were inspired to become a doer and not just a listener. Apply what you've heard today in your own business and watch things change for the better. Lastly, remember that all the money in the world can't save your soul. Seek first the kingdom of God, my friends. We'll see you next time.
For more information about the Quick Talk Podcast or Joshua's other businesses, visit our website, quicktalkpodcast.com. Have a blessed day.